Let us check in with our good friend Jeffrey Lord, American Spectator, Conservative Review, TheJeffreyLord.com, Newsmax TV, and every Monday at this time, he's on this station. How about that? Hello, Jeffrey.
Hello there, Richard Dixon. How are you?
I am exquisite. It's a little rainy. It's a little down, a little overcast over here, and we're recovering from the weekend. But CPAC took place. Were you anywhere near the joint?
I did not. I go quite frequently. As a matter of fact, I was at the very first one in 1974, not to date myself, when there were all of 400 people gathered in a hotel in Washington to hear California Governor Ronald Reagan speak.
Mm-hmm.
But I thought, in lieu of COVID, it was perhaps not the best idea to put myself in a sealed aluminum metal tube, fly 2 hours with masked strangers, walk through an airport. And then, you know, when I do this, you would be amused because of the last several years. And I always say this with a laugh. I am a quote-unquote celebrity.
Oh, yeah.
And therefore, I get lots and lots and lots of requests for selfies. And
I can imagine.
Last
yeah.
year, just when this was beginning, we had CPAC. I got home, and a week later, I got a call from CPAC that there was one person in the crowd who'd been identified by then with the virus. He was hospitalized, and they asked him for a list of people that he'd been in contact with. I was one of them.
Mm-hmm. I remember
that. So I began my first quarantine, and by the time I got out of it, everybody in the world was quarantined.
Yeah, and it's interesting because we weren't really doing the mask thing back then either. I mean, you go back a year,
no.
It was the end of February, and masks were hardly the norm. We didn't start putting those on for another couple of months. We're closing in, I think, on the end of this, though, as we're getting closer to herd immunity, and you hear a couple of people, doctors, one of them from Johns Hopkins, I believe, wrote a piece in the Wall Street Journal last week saying probably by the end of April we'll have herd immunity. Another popping up saying, well, it's more likely going to be May. Oh, all right, big 30-day difference. But I haven't heard anybody in power talking about this. Instead, we're hearing Joe Biden, well, if he ever speaks, Tony Fauci and company talking about how we're going to have to keep wearing masks right through 2023. Is this just a control issue with them, or what do you think is going on?
I think it can veer off in that direction. I mean, I'll just feel better when everybody, myself included, is vaccinated. I mean, I'm sorry to say that the vaccine situation in Pennsylvania is not very good. I sit on the editorial board of the Harrisburg Patriot News and its online counterpart, Penn Live. And before she departed, we had Dr. Rachel Levine, who was the Pennsylvania Health Secretary and is now joining the Biden administration, on. And she described what was going on. And then after her departure, her successor came to the editorial board, you know, via Zoom and had a conversation with us. And I have to say, everybody felt the situation is a mess.
Mm-hmm.
In Pennsylvania.
Oh, and, you're not alone.
one of my colleagues at the American Spectator, who lives in suburban Philadelphia, said that he and his wife were so frustrated at not being able to get vaccinated. They apparently also have a second home in Florida. So they went to Florida, and he got vaccinated in 11 days.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of places that are really having difficulty figuring out how to get this vaccine into people's arms. And it seems like the more regulations that are put on it, the more difficult it is. We're seeing that in New York. We're certainly seeing it in California. They have all these rules about, you know, who is supposed to be getting it and who you're not allowed to give it to. And by God, you'd better not let them go bad. You can't let this vaccine go bad. Andrew
right.
Cuomo with his fines for allowing vaccine to turn on you and not getting into the right people's arms. Florida was, they did something crazy. They said, we're going to send this stuff out to the hospitals and let them decide how to do it. Lo and behold, it
yeah.
seems to be working, huh?
Well, you know, Richard, this is why we're conservatives, right? I mean, we all know that it doesn't really matter what the subject matter is. The minute you get government involved
mm-hmm.
and 10,000 sets of regulations and bureaucracies and all this, problems ensue. And this is just but the latest example of it.
Yeah, I've always said government doesn't do anything particularly well. Speaking of New York and Andrew Cuomo, boy, he has found himself in something of a pickle. He did the apology thing yesterday, and I'm thinking, oh, see, that never weren't you paying attention to Bill Cosby? The minute you apologize, I'm not saying that what he did wasn't wrong, but the minute you apologize, they smell blood in the water, and now they're all over him, including people who were at one point his strongest advocates. Do you see, is this the beginning of the end, or does he manage to slip the noose?
Well, I think, I'm not sure what the end would be here. If it means the end of his term as governor, naturally, as it were, through not running for re-election or being defeated, I certainly think that's possible. There's an outside chance that he could be impeached. But, you know, I have to say, I've never met him. We were going back and forth once when I was leaving HUD, where I worked for Jack Kemp, when he was in the incoming Clinton administration. And I remember him casting a glance at me when we were at some Democratic debate somewhere, because he certainly knew me from CNN and debating Brother Chris. But I remember when his father was governor of New York, and there would be stories in the press about Andrew and how he was roaming around Albany and the state capitol and, you know, bossing people and giving orders and all this kind of thing. And, you know, you put somebody with that kind of personality in actual power in the governor's office, this is what's going to happen here. I mean, he thinks he's king of the roost and acts that way. And that can eventually catch up to you. There's just no question. I mean, the number of Democrats that have come out to slam him is it's somewhat amazing, but not unexpected, I would suggest.
I'm not sure which is worse. Certainly his treatment toward women has been reprehensible. But the threats that he has issued to people to silence them strikes me as slightly more terrifying because, you know, like you said, the guy does have some power and in an effort to cling to it. But this is not uncommon for powerful men. We certainly heard about this happening under the Clinton administration as well. And, you know, I think some of it slipped out under the Trump administration, too. It's nothing short of abuse. And I guess the real question is New York better for it, or is New York worse for it, or is it of no consequence whatsoever? Time will tell, perhaps?
Yeah, I imagine that. So, I mean, it'll be interesting to see how this plays out, because, I mean, when you get Democrats out there in New York openly talking about impeaching him, that's pretty amazing to behold. And, you know, it's at that point that all of his overreaches with people can really gang up on him. And yeah. It wouldn't surprise me in the least.
Yeah, that's the whole be nice to people on the way up because you never can tell when you might meet them on the way back down again.
Exactly right.
I'm not sure that he took that advice to heart. Hold on, if you would, please, Jeffrey. We've got to take a quick break, but we're going to come back. There's much more national news that needs to be addressed, and we shall address it after this. Don't go away. We're chatting with Jeffrey Lord of the American Spectator and Conservative Review and Newsmax TV. And I see that John Durham is, like the rest of the U.S. attorneys, stepping down, but is still going to stay on as the special counsel on Russiagate. I'm curious, does anybody believe we're going to see a report out of this guy? I mean, I got to figure, if you're going to be the special counsel, eventually you have to issue a report, even if it's to say, yeah, I didn't find anything.
Yeah, I must say, I've been a little skeptical of this, but the fact that he is staying on, I mean, this was one of then-Attorney General Barr's good decisions, in essence, to cover here the possibility that Biden would win and they'd dismiss U.S. attorneys, and so he gave him this separate position as a special counsel. And while he's still fireable in that sense, for those of us old enough to remember what happens when a president fires a special prosecutor, I'm thinking of Richard Nixon firing Archibald Cox.
Oh yeah,
back there in Watergate, the Saturday Night Massacre, as it came to be called. You know, there's real political consequences for that I suspect Biden and his team don't want to deal with.
Yeah, I would hope not. At the same time, you know, he could distance himself from all of the people that were involved in that, although he was, of course, in one of the meetings, Joe Biden was, where they had discussed possibly using the, what was it, the Logan Act to prosecute yeah. Flynn. It's another one of these situations where you're like, well, you were in the meeting, Joe. I realize that your cognitive abilities are failing, but this was a couple of years ago. You might still have been on top of it at the time. John Solomon has been doing some great reporting on this. I was just talking about a report that he did last week that showed that they figured out fairly rapidly, judging from the evidence, that within two and a half months, they figured out that there was absolutely no collusion between Russia and the Trump campaign, which means they spent the next year and, 7 months investigating anything and everything they could find in a desperate attempt to find a crime. You know, they had to find something that they could charge. And what they did finally come up with was relatively thin gruel, in my opinion. Now, if a simple investigative reporter... Well, he's a very good investigative reporter, let's be fair, John Solomon. But if he's able to track that sort of stuff down, how hard can it be for Durham to basically get the, get to the root of the problem here?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's a very good question, Richard. I understand, I mean, his reputation is being very, very thorough and very, very detailed and all this kind of thing. I'd be curious as to what's sitting in his drawer, as it were, right this minute, in terms mm-hmm. of a written report. But we will see. I mean, either the proof is in the pudding or it's not.
I guess we will see. Hopefully he comes up with something in the not-too-distant future. I always maintain, though,
fire from this earth, when we're 109, that would be good.
I don't know. I mean, I think the powerful and the rich protect each other and themselves. So I said early on, I'm just cynical enough to think that nobody's ever going to pay a price for this,
Yeah.
And it's offensive to me because those are my tax dollars that they used chasing after ghosts that they really knew weren't there. That's just
right.
Annoying. And the same with two impeachment attempts.
Power.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, two impeachment attempts, neither one of which had any teeth whatsoever and anybody could see. And you just go, how many of my tax dollars are we throwing down that hole? What are we doing with this? Joe Biden not releasing the virtual visitor logs for the White House. That is to say, he's releasing the logs of people who come to see him physically, which is virtually nobody. And he refuses to release the logs of who is visiting him via video. This is yet another campaign promise that Joe Biden has gone bust on. He said that he was going to, return transparency to the White House like anybody cares. And now he is steadfastly refusing to release the logs of any sort of Zoom meetings he might be having. Who could he be meeting with that he doesn't want us to know about?
Oh, the usual collection of swamp dwellers, lobbyists, and people have this, that, or the other connection to him, or to Hunter, or his brothers. All mm-hmm. of that is entirely possible. Remember his... his chief of staff, Ron Klain, has been around the block a long time, in and out of things, and was his chief of staff, I think, when he was vice president, and was chief of staff to Al Gore, and these are people who know that swamp inside and out. So a detailed coming and going is probably something they would like to avoid.
Yeah, I would guess, because, if you're meeting with China... That's never a good look, I think.
Well, that's right.
Yeah.
and I have to laugh. All of this stuff about Russia, Trump-Russia collusion, which turns out to be not true, but they did set a template for linking a foreign power to an administration, and in this case, it's China. And I think there's some there with this.
I would agree.
The latest is the 2022 Olympics. And Biden is not going to withdraw the U.S. from it or do anything to ruffle the, mm-hmm. waters and all that kind of thing. Well, what does that tell you?
It tells me that he and China have been doing business together for a long time. And
yeah.
Now he's got his son and the rest of his family involved. Look, normally now people get this wrong all the time. I'm hearing people who I think should know better saying, where's the State of the Union address? How come we haven't had a State of the Union address? Well, not to put too fine a point on it, when you have an incoming administration that's been in office for a month, you generally don't have a State of the Union address. You do have a joint session of Congress where they come and lay out their agenda and their plans. Yeah. And Joe Biden told us we were going to get one of those. And as of yet, it has not happened. Do you think that they're trying to keep this guy under wraps? I mean, I saw him answer a couple of simple questions the other day, and he's at the point he can't even get through two sentences without muffing them.
Well, I may have said this to you before, Richard. I probably have, because I've written about it, et cetera. But I think what's going on is some variation of the Woodrow Wilson presidency, where you had a president who'd had a stroke, and he was kept out of public view by his wife, his private secretary, a guy named Joe Tumulty, who was a longtime Wilson associate from New Jersey, and his doctor, Dr. Carrie Grayson. And they basically controlled access to Wilson. They told the public that he was experiencing exhaustion. They didn't tell the truth about it. And the doctor told Mrs. Wilson he can't stand any stress. It could kill him. So don't bring him any decisions to make. So she ran the country.
Yep. She did. Now, do you think it's Kamala Harris who's doing that? Because
I just have some. Well, the interesting thing about that was the cabinet wanted to get a statement of disability so that the vice president could run things, mm-hmm. and the two top aides refused because they liked Wilson. They said they weren't. It would be a betrayal. They wouldn't do it. So the vice president was kept out of the loop. In a sense, it wouldn't surprise me in the least if the Biden close-up intimates were keeping Kamala Harris out of the loop on stuff like this.
Oh, yeah. I mean, she didn't even know about the Syria bombing. She was she came out and said, I wasn't informed about this, and this is unacceptable. And I'm thinking, well, but did anybody inform Joe Biden about it? Because I don't know.
Right. There's the thing. And this is what's so disturbing about this presidency. I mean, I suspect that long after we are gone, Richard, there will be historians who will unearth what factually was going on here behind the scenes. But we're certainly not going to learn it now. And there's no one in the press who wants to investigate it.
No, and it's, you know, he is, I would say he's lucky, but actually I think this whole thing, the way that he managed to get into the White House was largely as a result of the coronavirus, and now they can use that as an excuse for not gathering people and him not having press conferences and not coming on television. I mean, it's one thing to talk about doing this circa World War I with Woodrow Wilson. There was no TV, there was very little radio, you know, basically people got their news from the printed page. We live in an internet age where everything is instant,
and it comes out. You know what they're doing comes out in little ways. And one of the ones that I saw, I think yesterday, some reporter asked Jen Psaki, the press secretary, "Well, you know, it's great that you're doing these press briefings for us every day, but where is the president? When is he going to hold a press conference?" And the answer was more or less, "Not yet."
It is quite a change from Donald Trump, who loved sparring with the press, loved it. It was, you know, he thrived on it. That's how he managed to leave the presidency looking younger than he went in. Jeffrey, we've got to leave it there. A pleasure as always. We'll do it again next Monday. Have a great week, my friend.
Okay. Thanks, Richard. You too. Bye-bye.
There you go. Jeffrey Lord, American Spectator, Conservative Review, Newsmax TV, and thejeffreylord.com. Plus, every Monday, he's heard right here on this show.